The Capital Investment Committee hearing for March 5th is called to order. We do not have a quorum, and so we'll move straight to presentations on the governor's 2024 bonding recommendations. Today we have the agenda first, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources and the Board of Water, Soil, and Resources, the Department of Transportation, and then the Met Council. Welcome to the committee, Manager Minkler. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Lee and committee members. For the record, I'm Samantha Minkler, Capital Asset Manager from the Minnesota DNR. Thanks for having me here today to present our 2024 capital budget request. And Commissioner Stroman sends her regrets that she's not able to be here today. So we'll get started with an overview of our capital assets. The DNR manages and maintains public land and infrastructure on behalf of Minnesotans, providing countless benefits to our state. Our assets serve Minnesotans across the state and are part of the fabric of communities. Caring for these assets requires a systematic and comprehensive approach. The infrastructure programs and projects in our bonding proposal contribute in direct and dynamic ways towards advancing our agency mission, which is to work with Minnesotans to conserve and manage the state's natural resources, to provide outdoor recreation opportunities, and to provide for commercial uses of natural resources in a way that creates a sustainable quality of life. We'd like to thank you for your support in the 2023 legislative session. The capital bonding appropriations we received are allowing DNR to take immediate action on our capital asset needs. We're busy working on projects to modernize our infrastructure, including replacement of the Waterville Hatchery, upgrades to the State Forest Nursery, rehabilitation of public water accesses, and many more. While the 2023 bonding appropriations gave a boost to addressing these large modernization projects, an immense need remains. So I'll give a little overview of our assets. Our assets are diverse and unlike many others across the state. Some of our assets include the State Park Campground or Cabin, where Minnesotans spend their summer vacations, host family reunions and picnics, school trips, weddings, meetups for hiking and bird watching, and winter activities, and the list goes on. The public fishing pier, where a child catches their first fish, the fish hatchery, where a fish was raised for stocking, the native prairie that supports pheasants, songbirds, and pollinators while improving water quality and capturing carbon, the state forests and roads that support them, that support wildlife habitat, recreation, climate mitigation, and the forest products economy. And the DNR office, where people can buy a fishing license, submit a permit application, or get information about natural resources in the community. That's just a small example of our assets. There's many more. DNR capital assets are geographically dispersed. So in addition to the diverse asset types, we have assets across all 87 counties and 5.6 million acres of land. And our 2023 capital asset need report, which I believe you got a copy of last year, shows that we have a current replacement value of $3.5 billion for our built infrastructure. Stewardship of these assets requires ongoing repair, renovation, and replacement. The DNR has a growing deferred maintenance challenge. The number, variety, condition, and age of DNR facilities contributes to a significant capital need for asset preservation. So as you can see on this graph here, asset preservation appropriations, which are shown by the blue line at the bottom, have been far short of what's needed to address the deferred maintenance backlog, shown by the green bars that are increasing over time. As a result, the need keeps growing. Nearly one in four buildings are in unacceptable or poor condition. Only one in four buildings meets today's design and building standards, including accessibility, and nearly one in three buildings are over 80 years old. To help to meet these challenges, the DNR has developed an efficient and effective capital asset management program that deploys the funding that we do receive toward the highest priority preservation and improvement projects across Minnesota. For example, in 2023, we were happy to receive $36 million in natural resources asset preservation, which we of course abbreviate NRAP. 23% of that money is encumbered already or spent on specific projects, And this slide here shows some schematics of the Brainerd office where we were this summer. The parking lot and pedestrian bridge project is being designed now. 72% is obligated towards an array of projects that are listed there on the screen, including building components, the Myrie Big Island State Park sewer connection, the Itasca State Park Douglas Lodge water and wastewater lines, and a variety of roads, bridges, and culvert projects on state parks, state forests, and wildlife management areas, as well as hatchery repairs. Our list of highest priority needs is regularly updated based on latest information. In this way, new events such as unexpected failure of building components or storm events can be addressed at that time. The timing of our construction projects depends on a number of factors, including the overall volume of projects we have, the complexity of project design, the availability of in-house design and engineering resources, and the sequencing of projects. The key project steps are to first receive the funding, then project design, then project bid, and then construction. So therefore, a majority of bonding funds are encumbered and spent in the latter years of the bonding appropriation. Given DNR's size and scope of custodial responsibilities, it's necessary that we strike a balance between taking a programmatic system-wide investment approach and a targeted approach. This systematic approach focuses on prioritizing the greatest need and efficiently completing capital improvement projects. Our system needs are significant. Our asset portfolio is large, and with over 2,900 buildings and 30,000 building components, we can't seek approval for each roof, each HVAC, and other projects like roads. We just have too many. So this programmatic approach allows us to really maximize efficiencies, to continuously prepare, design, and execute construction projects. If one project gets held up, we can pivot to a project that's ready to go, and we coordinate these projects to maximize efficiencies and minimize disruption. We need to be able to prioritize system-wide and not just for one location or one division. We also bring more focused attention and resources to specific projects through these targeted investments, and this year our project is that accessibility project. Accessibility is a key piece of our approach to design and construction. While each asset preservation does incorporate accessibility, it often does not make an entire building or site accessible. So this project, improving accessibility of DNR-managed lands and facilities, allows the more comprehensive upgrades at one site that we can't easily achieve using NRAP. And finally, the community investments we make through our flood hazard mitigation project and parks and trails grant programs are important for supporting local infrastructure needs. This slide provides a high-level overview of the six projects that make up our bonding request. The 2024 request totals $100.55 million, and as you can see, the largest category is natural resources asset preservation. I'll quickly walk through each project next. But please note that these investments will advance the DNR's mission and address critical issues such as improving access to the outdoors, advancing safety and community well-being, and rehabilitating aging and, in some cases, failing infrastructure. Natural resources asset preservation, taking care of what we have. Our request is $71.55 million for this program. Asset preservation investments ensure that our infrastructure is safe and functional for the public, supports conservation of Minnesota's natural resources, and preserves the state's investments in its capital assets. We consider design factors such as accessibility, energy efficiency, and climate resiliency in this work. The NRAP program funds projects to repair, renovate, or replace degraded or failing capital assets across our portfolio. These funds are used for buildings, roads, trails, bridges, public water accesses, campground infrastructure, fish hatcheries, water control structures, monitoring wells, and more. Some of the photo examples you see on the screen are just an example of typical NRAP projects. Up at the top, there's some graded stairs at a DNR office in Big Falls. In many towns across Minnesota, DNR offices are a hub of activity. When these offices are in poor condition, they present a hazard to visitors and staff alike and create barriers to access with those with disabilities. In contrast, offices that are accessible and well-maintained are an asset to the community and better support the staff who provide services in that community as well. The second photo below is a culvert washout on a state forest road in Finland State Forest, which has now been repaired. These roads support recreation, sustainable timber management, and emergency response. The third photo is a bathroom building at Whitewater State Park, where we were also this summer. This aging facility presents unique challenges in accessibility and maintenance. When rehabilitation of facilities such as these occur, safety, we incorporate accessibility, safety, and operational improvements. The DNR considers our highest priority NRAP needs when developing our bonding request. Our project list is dynamic, and like I mentioned before, we regularly update those priorities using a data-driven approach guided by the principles you see listed on the slide, and we, of course, incorporate the data from our 2023 capital asset needs report. The map on the slide, which I believe has also been provided to the committee, shows the locations of our highest priority projects for the 2024 request and the different categories as well. Next, we request $12 million for the Betterment of Buildings program. Betterment is an important complement to NRAP funding. While NRAP addresses the backlog of deferred maintenance that affects the safety, usability, and effectiveness of DNR-managed facilities and infrastructure, Betterment funding allows for substantial improvements or additions to or replacement of buildings that fail to meet current needs or have reached the end of their useful life. These programs together are critical to address our substantial infrastructure needs. Our top betterment priority this year is adding needed storage capacity and examination facilities for mineral exploration samples at the Hibbing Drill Corps Library. This project is design complete and ready for bidding in 2024. Please note that funding needs also remain for constructing a plug seedling facility at the State Forest Nursery, high priority replacement of unsafe or inadequate DNR offices and storage spaces, and constructing new or significantly modernized visitor centers, picnic shelters, trail centers, camper cabins, and shower buildings. Next is acquisition and betterment of public lands. Capital funding for public lands improves and conserves Minnesota's natural heritage, enriches public outdoor recreational opportunities, and provides for sustainable uses of natural resources. This also contributes to climate mitigation and adaptation goals as well. The 2024 request of $7 million focuses on reforestation and other land improvement efforts, enhancing access, quality, and safety on DNR managed state lands, acquisition of strategic high priority in holdings and parcels. Our next project is improving accessibility of DNR managed lands and facilities, which I've already touched on a little bit, but just a recap that comprehensive accessibility improvements help advance DNR's strategic priorities of connecting people to the outdoors and expanding diversity, equity, inclusion. $2 million will allow us to make comprehensive accessibility improvements to one or two high-use state parks and recreation areas or wildlife management and aquatic management areas. Comprehensive accessibility improvements may include work like improving the accessibility of bathrooms, parking areas, showers, campsites, trails, day use areas, interpretive facilities, and hunting blinds. Providing new amenities to meet the needs of an increasingly diverse user base with a variety of physical abilities and skills, and improving signage and interpretive exhibits when part of a larger renovation effort. And last but not least, our two community investment requests. We request $6 million for the Flood Hazard Mitigation Grant Program, which provides cost-share grants to local governments, including cities, counties, and watershed districts for projects that reduce flood risk. This funding is critical in the face of the changing climate. And we also request $2 million for Parks and Trails Regional Grant Program, which provides competitive grants to local governments for acquisition and development of local parks and trails across Minnesota. These grant programs allow DNR to partner with local communities to acquire land and develop parks and trails to help create a network of close-to-home recreation facilities. There's an ongoing need for these small project grants to help communities with the smaller projects, especially those that assist communities with compliance with state and federal regulations. Capital bonding dollar supplement funding provided through LCCMR, lottery in lieu, and federal programs. Grant requests consistently exceed available funding. In summary, the DNR's 2024 bonding request will help us maintain and preserve the essential natural resources infrastructure that benefits Minnesotans across the state. Our proposal focuses on taking care of what we have while advancing strategic priorities to serve current and future generations. Thank you, and I'd be happy to take questions.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Minkler, good to see you again. She was on several of our bonding trips last year. So. Just a few questions. That little series I might be going through here, Mr. Chair. Ms. Minkler, who owns the building, the buildings and the property that the DNR works with?
Manager Minkler.
Chair Lee, Rep. Erdahl. The DNR owns the buildings. We have the state of Minnesota owns the buildings. We have the custodial responsibility for them.
What you're trying to tell me is that the people of the state of Minnesota own it.
Manager Minkler.
I believe so, yes.
Right, thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and you are, through us, responsible for maintaining, preserving, caring for these buildings. And I believe you, your deferred maintenance is like $800 million, is that correct?
Manager Minkler.
Chair Lee, Rep. Erdahl, yes, that is correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so you're asking for $100 million. So we're still, you know, making progress, but we're still behind.
Manager Minkler.
Chair Lee, Rep. Erdahl, yes, that is correct.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, you know, we have to come to the realization that, okay, we are falling behind, and every now and then we don't get around to doing a bonding bill. We have people out there who don't think we need to bond at all. And with that thought in mind, I'm hearing now, well, we shouldn't be positive that we're going to bond. So with that said, you know, maybe you should look at some contingencies. How much do you collect in, maybe you won't know this, but I'll throw it out anyway. What do you collect in fees and park passes and those types of things in a year?
Manager Minkler.
Chair Lee, Rep. Erdahl. I don't have that information today, but I can certainly get it for you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, Ms. Minkler. Well, if you had the number, what I would do is suggest that you would need to significantly raise fees and pass amounts to cover the $800 million. We can help you out a little bit. We did a little math here. And we have 5.7 million people in Minnesota. There's a suggestion that we should just charge every man, woman, and child $140, and that would take care of your the amount you need, and we'd never have to bond again for that. What would you think of that?
Manager Minkler.
Chair Lee, Rep. Erdahl. We are not requesting that.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think most people may have figured out that I'm trying to make a point here. I'm maybe even being a tad sarcastic. But it's not just you. It's in agency after agency, department after department, that we are continually falling farther and farther behind with our deferred maintenance of the property that the people of Minnesota own. And I would hope that some folks come to understand that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. I thought for a second there you were going to be a supporter of Chair Hansen raising some fees. Representative Grasso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Winkler, just looking at a couple projects for my district, that is it normal for it to take 5 to 10 years to get a boat landing put in?
Measure Winkler.
Chair Lee, Representative, we have a strategic plan for the public water accesses, and so how those are planned and then funded, it just depends on the funding we receive. So I'm not sure which PWA you're talking about specifically, but I'm assuming that it would be part of a plan.
Representative Grasso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then another state park that has been requesting funds to repair and make more accessible restrooms and such, and to update from their just about dilapidated state, and that money has been like pulling teeth without Novocaine. That's not coming to them. Now, they've been making a lot of requests to the DNR, and I can tell you later as far as where these two spots are. And listening to you talk about the size of the DNR and all the stuff that's going on, it just drives home the fact that a lot of our agencies have grown so big that it's hard for them to function properly, in is my opinion. It might not be a lot of people's opinion, but it is mine, because I've seen the stumbling and the bumbling and the dragging out projects that would benefit all the public, and just taking an obscene amount of time to get them done. So I'd like to maybe just talk to you afterwards if that is okay with you.
Sure.
Thank you,
Representative Grasso. Members, any additional questions? Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you could go back to the slide with the fish hatcheries, and we had invested in fish hatcheries and boat docks last year, I think $100 million, on a bipartisan bill voting for that, I think bipartisan vote. But what I'm wondering, you know, we have this issue with nitrates and water, and if we're going to upgrade the fish hatcheries, is there a way where we can be monitoring water, both the water going in and the water going out of those fish hatcheries? You know, I remember, you know, it's been 20 plus years ago now, stream monitoring systems that were set up with sensors. I think there's a proposal for nitrate sensors from one of the other agencies, but you could do, you know, individual pulling samples or automated sampling, looking at nitrates. Just wondering, can we build that in the design when we're upgrading the facilities so we can be monitoring the public water that goes in and out of these facilities?
Manager Minkler. Welcome, Assistant Commissioner. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources, and thank you, Representative Hansen, for the question. We have been looking into this based upon some conversations we've had. It's roughly about $350,000 for the infrastructure improvements that would be there, and then an ongoing maintenance and operation of those facilities. We have a fiscal note that will be coming into the system here shortly, and we're happy to talk with you more about those activities.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Meyer. I just think that's something we should do in the public infrastructure. It would help us do long-term monitoring to see what the results are.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Minkler. I have two specific questions. One is about the Bedora Nursery, and how much would be needed at this point to finish the work there?
Manager Minkler.
Chair Lee, Rep. Ryer, thanks for the question, and the amount is $18 million for that third phase of the nursery expansion.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you. And my other question, I'm really pleased that there's a category for accessibility. To me, it's such a barrier for, we want everyone to be outside. We want everyone to be able to be experiencing that to the best of their ability. So we have $2 million in there. What would it take if you had a wish list and you could do it all? What would the investment be?
Manager Minkler.
Chair Lee, Representative Ryer, thank you for the question. System-wide, I don't have that number. I know we did request $25 million. I believe that would have, that's a, the manageable amount for the bonding cycle. So I think it was $25
million. Representative Ryer. Members, any additional questions? Seeing none, I will ask my questions and we'll move on. So, as you may know, Manager Minkler, we had a conversation in Chair Lilly's committee today regarding similar work that the DNR is doing with legacy funding. And so can you tell me to what extent is the overlap between those projects, you know, getting legacy funding and those that are in the NRAP program? Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, again, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources, and thank you for the question. I was actually talking with Chairman Lilly about that as before the committee started. We use legacy funds and bonding funds to enhance each other. So if you think of a bonding project that the state would be financed, Gitche-Gami Trail, for example, the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails folks use legacy money to create feeder trails into that system. We'll also use legacy money to create feeder trails into Grand Marais from that. So we look at enhancing those two funds and opportunities that are there. Our bonding, as you know, bonding doesn't go for everything we need to. Our assets, and thank you, Representative Rudolph, for talking about our asset preservation needs, and it's a continual project, right? Things get older, things get newer. But we look at enhancing both funds. We look at enhancing all of our funds. Like, we had this conversation last year with our Get Out More General Fund, bonding and legacy. They will really enhance each other in ways that we could never create one project with one source of funding. So there's a myriad of other number of examples like that within parks, within acquisitions that we do, leveraging federal dollars, state dollars, RIM license plate dollars to make those dollars go further, make the projects longer. So we would love to be part of that conversation with you and provide more detail, but those are just some of the examples.
So, Commissioner, then I think just directly then, the legacy funding could fund some of these NREP projects and vice versa, where the bonding dollars could fund some of these legacy projects?
Mr. Chair, I think NREP would be considered supplanting. So we have to consider supplanting versus supplementing. We have an operational order talking about legacy funds and how they have to supplant or supplement other funds. So our bonding and legacy and other funds supplant, they supplement each other, not supplant. I think if we're looking at taking legacy for bathroom repairs or other things that we add on to with legacy, that's the way we do it. But if you're going to supplant natural resource asset preservation program dollars with legacy funds, that could cause us some problems.
Well, and then just moving on, I think, you know, Manager Minkler, when you mentioned the $2 million for the Parks and Trails program, and I think to the commissioner's point, you mentioned supplementing, you know, other sources of fund. And so can you tell us to what extent are, you know, we putting in funding through that program, and are we doing more than 50% where there's not a local share, or is there still a local share, you know, adding legacy dollars, bonding dollars, and whatnot?
Mr. Chair, I can briefly answer that question. We'll provide more information. Those dollars, the $2 million for our local regional trail grants program, do require a local match. I am not sure if any of those local matches are legacy. I don't believe so, but we'll get back to you on that. And maybe we need to sort that piece of it out, right? That any matching funds need to be non-state dollars, and then the legacy funds could go on top of that to add on to the project. So I understand completely your question.
Yeah, thank you for that, you know, Commissioner. I really appreciate, you know, the DNR looking at that, that, you know, non-state sources. I think maybe I have heard wrong, you know, when we have people talking about how LCCMR and other sources of state funding as a non-state match, I don't think that that's the intent of the legislature to have other sources of state funding being that match. And so I really appreciate the DNR taking a look at that. And, you know, I think, you know, just looking at just some of the documents that we have in legacy where some of those dollars are for pre-designed works for new projects. And so I'm just trying to figure out what is the relationship between legacy and capital investment, because I think, you know, to represent Erdahl's point, we have a lot of state assets. And when, you know, the DNR for your assets, you know, you could potentially go for bonding dollars or for legacy dollars, but agencies like the Department of Corrections, they only have one source of funding. And so I think that's the decision that we have to make as a committee, and that's why I'm asking these questions, so that we could get the information that we need as we put our budget together. So thank you for that. Next on the agenda, we'll move on to Bowser. Welcome, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Lee and members. I'm John Jaski, Executive Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And joining me is Andrea Fish, our Assistant Director. And Mike is going to get the presentation up, and I'll begin. Again, members, just a very short introduction to how our agency operates. We work on the private lands of Minnesota. You heard, of course, from the DNR about all the public lands and facilities. We do that in partnership with others. You know, we're a small agency that uses local governments primarily, as well as other partners, non-government, tribal, et cetera, to do all of our programs and projects. And these recommendations that you'll be hearing about are in that same category. You can see here just a list of the important partners that we use to do this work, soil and water conservation districts, watershed districts, counties, joint powers organizations of various forms in the metropolitan area, and otherwise state and federal agencies. And you'll hear in a minute about the federal leveraging opportunity with Reinvest in Minnesota, CREP proposal. And we also work with non-government organizations in various forms and our tribal governments. And you can see here just indicating that if you look at Minnesota's landscape, we're blessed to have a lot of public land, but we also have a major part of it in private ownership. These are the statutory authorities that we use to carry out our responsibilities and programs. The two that are in boldface here are the two that underpin these recommendations that you'll be hearing about in a moment. 103F includes our Reinvest in Minnesota Reserve Program, and Chapter 103G includes the wetland protection programs. And so here's the summary of our recommendations. The Reinvest in Minnesota program is seeking $10 million, and the Local Government and Roads Wetland Replacement Program is seeking $2.5 million of general obligation funds and $2 million of general fund cash. The Reinvest in Minnesota program, as I alluded to, is a statutory program that's been around since the late 1980s. We use this to acquire permanent conservation easements and restore lands, marginal lands. We also use it to protect some high-quality lands that are in private ownership. Most of these dollars would be used to seek the matching opportunity with the federal government, with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We have an agreement that was signed in 2016 that if Minnesota brings these dollars to the table, we will get approximately $1.5 from the federal government to do this very same work. And that is mostly to restore wetlands. We have four practices or types of projects that occur under this agreement. You know, prairie pothole wetland restoration, floodplain restoration, drinking water protection, and filter strips. So those are the conservation practices that will be accomplished with those dollars. The vast majority of it goes to wetland restoration because that's the most marginal land, but the greatest amount of public benefits, including, you know, flood control, water quality, habitat, carbon sequestration, all those things you see listed there in the second bullet point. Just one thing I would add is that, and we had a chance to meet with you, Mr. Chairman, yesterday, and thank you for that opportunity. This partnership with the federal government requires that, of course, we work with them, and one of the things that we had to do was take a short pause, or maybe a six-month pause, because of the congressional gridlock, I guess you might say, in Washington, when they, the federal farm bill is passed every 5 years approximately. Well, it expired, so they had to come up with some arrangement to extend that, and they finally did that with a one-year period, which then allowed that federal machinery to be cranked back up and allocate dollars from the federal side. So we, in fact, just today announced the batching period that would use these dollars that we have, and these, we would be adding this to it and continue that cycle going forward. So just a status report on that particular item. I'm going to end there on that particular recommendation, and either take questions at the end or anytime in between.
Welcome, Assistant Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Andrea Fish. I'm Assistant Director at Bowser, bringing forward today the Local Government Roads Wetlands Replacement Program bonding request in front of you today. We're requesting, as Mr. Director Jasky said earlier today, $2.5 million in general obligation bonds and $2 million in general fund cash to address our statutory requirements to administer this program. This program replaces wetlands and wetland areas of public waters that might be drained, filled, or otherwise impacted by public transportation projects on existing roads. The funds restore and permanently protect wetlands and generate wetland replacement or mitigation credits for local government roads in order to meet the requirements. The average annual statewide demand for this program is around 170 credits. And when the state does the administration of this program, as you know, providing for the transfer of credits around this state, it provides larger and higher quality wetland mitigation when accomplished by the state. It's more cost efficient and can provide for expedited permitting at the local level. The demand for credits varies statewide, and it can be impacted by local needs or federal infrastructure financing. We provide credits within what are called bank service areas on a regional basis. And within those areas, there are sometimes cases where there is a low credit balance or no credit availability for local governments. When that situation occurs, they will have to purchase credits from the next closest bank service area, although at a higher cost than if they would have been able to purchase it from their existing region. Additionally, it can take about 7 years from when funding becomes available to when credits are deposited. There's a process of identifying appropriate places to create the wetland credits, planning and identifying local government infrastructure needs, getting approvals and permits for that before finally everything is released. So we like to make sure that we have at least 5 years of pre-planned credit availability so that local governments can really count on that being there for them when they are planning their local infrastructure projects. And Mr. Chair, members, we are happy to address any questions you might have about our bonding requests.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman and Assistant Director Fish. As I recall, correct me if I'm wrong, under this program, it was for the biennium that we funded it. But the second year of the biennium, it seemed like every time you were out of money. So we would kind of, with an emergency method, put in more money the second year. Now, I believe we changed that system. And so is this a yearly request? I mean, has the demand for money improved under the system of doing it each year annually instead of biennially?
Assistant Director.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, I might ask for an assist from our Director Jasky as well on this. We have typically come forward with bonding requests when, you know, bonding was done biennially. It was more of a biennial request, although we also have seen a trajectory of an anticipated reduction in credits over the next 5 to 7 years because of this expanded timeline. So you are seeing us come forward 2 years in a row now in order to ensure that we do have appropriate level of credits available across the state, given the demand and our ability to meet that with the request.
Director Jasky.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, and Ms. Fish wasn't here when those things that you're describing were necessary. And what we do is we project the amount of wetlands that are going to be impacted by road authorities, you know, counties, cities, and township projects, and then they don't need to worry about that under part of their federal and state permitting. We are, with this level of funding, we will be at back next year asking for more, because that projection, as was indicated, shows that our needs are not going to meet the demand for the credits that those local road authorities have.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chair and Director Jashke. So what you're saying is that the current system of doing annual appropriations is an improvement over what you were doing before.
Director.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, you know, I'm not sure it's an improvement. If we receive sufficient funding in the every other year schedule, that would work as well, but that has not happened. And so we need to come back each year and present to you what our circumstances are and seek an additional amount if necessary.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Director Rashke. Of course, the reason we did it is it seemed like we reached a crisis point every other year, and, you know, I don't know if you're getting enough funding, but at least we're trying to avert the crisis that we seem to be facing each year. So I hope it's working. Thank you.
Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Director Jansky. Thank you. So you're asking for this money, and I'm sure you're aware there's a possibility that we might be able to do that in Legacy, I think. Or are you asking for additional funds? Because the forecast has indicated that we may have some additional funds, and I think the Clean Water Council is looking at funding some of the RIM money through there. Is that, are you aware of these conversations, and what's your position on that first?
Director.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lilly, I'm aware of some conversations. I haven't seen anything specific. These, as was indicated by DNR, you know, the Reinvestment in Minnesota program has been around since the late 1980s, and so we have to be very careful we don't do as was described by substituting, right? We know that's really important. We did not seek any funding for the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program from the Clean Water Fund this past year, and so there is no recommendation on the table. If your committee or others choose to go down that path, we'll be happy to provide input on that.
Okay. Chair Lilly.
I think that's fine for now.
All right, thank you. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Director Jashke and Director Fish. I want to get into the timing question here with the one-year extension of the Farm Bill. And so we have a 2016 agreement on CREP, and we have the capacity based on acres rather than dollars. Is that correct?
Director?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, that agreement that was signed in 2016 was for 10 years. It had up to 60,000 acres that we could enroll under that agreement. Of course, during that time, the price of land has increased quite dramatically, and so we are below the acre threshold. But we still have the opportunity with the federal money, because they have an obligation to keep funding, and as long as the state keeps bringing its portion to that agreement.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Director Jashke. Last year, we gave you $3 million for CREP in the Bowser budget, and with the difficulties with the Farm Bill. So what's the status of that $3 million? You know, and this gets into the supplement question, because we did appropriate money from the general fund, a traditional source of funding. What's happened with that $3 million?
Director.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, I think you're referring to the Conservation Reserve Program incentive funding that was provided through the general fund, which was different than securing easements, which this proposal is, the investment of this asset for the state. That was to provide incentives to get landowners to sign up for 15-year contracts in critical areas of our state where we had water quality issues. We had the prior appropriation that is complete. This one is now just being launched. We'll be announcing that sometime this spring.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So with the 1 year, let's say we appropriate $10 million in the bonding bill. It happens May 20th. And you have a 1 year extension of the farm bill. Is there the demand? Is there a backlog of landowners that would participate in general across the state? And then I'll have one quick follow-up.
Director.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, we don't do a backlog anymore because we really, the federal government doesn't provide for that. What we do is these batching periods. So we do a sign up every quarter or so is traditionally the schedule. So then we take those proposals, rank the highest ones, and score them and fund those, right? And that was really important because getting the federal government to agree to pick the highest and best ones was a super important thing that they had never done before. And so Minnesota kind of set the standard there. But the farm bill, you know, whether it gets passed and renewed in the near term or they wait another year, it's, you know, of course, the politics of Washington are hard to know. But it will happen, and this will continue across the bridge of those farm bills because that agreement that was signed by the governor and the Secretary of Agriculture in 2016 will carry forward despite a new farm bill or an extension of one.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so one of the differences that's happened in the last 6 months is the petition to EPA about a public health crisis in southeastern Minnesota, which is a very porous karst topography. Does the current CREP agreement allow for CREP acres to be enrolled in the karst region?
Director.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, yes, not everywhere because that CREP agreement has certain criteria. For example, around drinking water, it has to be, you know, within a public well supply area, right? And these are, I think, in many cases, private wells that are at risk. But we are in conversations with USDA about looking to potentially extend or expand that agreement. And that will take some effort and some decision making by both state and federal government to do that. But I think we can be successful in southeastern Minnesota in helping with that issue. The soil and water conservation districts are already prepared to do that. And, you know, with, I think, some additional funding in different categories, and Representative Lilly alluded to some of that, I think we can make a big difference.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you have the authority, if we had the money, for public land retirement on permanent easements or 45-year easements, would that be correct?
Director.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, that's correct. And even if we didn't fit it inside of the CREP CREP agreement, we also have other federal funding pursuits that we could look into that might be more targeted than that one specifically, including, I'm going to use another acronym, Regional Conservation Partnership Program that the USDA also has, which could also be helpful in bringing federal money to that problem.
Mr.
Chair Hansen.
And for private wells, then, CREP, you would need new statutory authority, or that wouldn't be supplanting because that would be new authority or new projects. Is that correct?
Director.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, we won't need any new statutory authority for sure. In fact, your bill has got some additional provisions in it that would move things into the statute from the rule that I think would cover all of that. What we need to do is seek the federal money that would best fit the situation that the problem down in that part of the state has been revealed to be.
Seeing no other questions, thank you both for coming by today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Next on the agenda, we have the Department of Transportation. Welcome, Commissioner. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nancy Dobenberger, and I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And I'm joined here with my colleague, Sam Brown, who is MnDOT's Budget Director. Thank you for providing MnDOT this opportunity to present our transportation-related items in the Governor's capital budget recommendation today. So as an overview for the presentation this afternoon, I will cover how our agency's vision, mission, and strategic planning influence the requests in the governor's capital budget. And I'll touch on funding implementation for asset preservation from last session. Before we start, I'd like to recognize the historical funding that was enacted last session, both in the capital budget and the transportation omnibus bill. The transportation omnibus bill authorized $600 million in trunk highway bonding, and the transportation omnibus budget also included funding for the local road improvement program, the local bridge replacement program, active transportation, safe routes to school, Greater Minnesota Transit, state airports, and IIJA discretionary grant match needs. So on top of this, there's the cash and bonding bill that included a number of things that I will discuss in a moment. So as an agency, our strategic vision is for a multimodal transportation system that maximizes the health of people, the environment, and our economy. And our mission is to connect and serve all people through a safe, equitable, and sustainable transportation system. Our statewide multimodal transportation plan provides objectives, performance measures, strategies, and actions to move Minnesota's transportation system forward. And this is the highest level policy plan for transportation in the state of Minnesota. So it covers all transportation, not just MnDOT. And MnDOT uses six objectives detailed in the SMTP, as we call it, to guide capital investment priorities, including safety, stewardship, climate, critical connections, healthy and equitable communities, transparent and open decision making. And these priorities align with the governor's One Minnesota plan. So our agency requests are assessed based on how they support MnDOT's strategic objectives. So now I will touch on enacted capital budget items from the 2023 session. So listed on this slide are capital budget appropriations from Chapter 72. The transportation omnibus budget, Chapter 68, also included funding for $18 million in local road improvement program funding, $18 million local bridge replacement funding, $39 million in active transportation, $20 million safe routes to school, $40 million in Greater Minnesota Transit, $36 million in state airports, and $216 million in IIJA discretionary grant match needs. And the transportation omnibus budget will authorize $600 million in trunk highway bonding. And I will talk about these in a little more detail. To take a moment to update you committee members on implementation of asset preservation items. So first I will touch on the Local Road Improvement Program, or the acronym we call LRIP. The 2023 session resulted in just under $103 million for competitive local road improvement programs. The local agency and MnDOT greatly appreciate this level of support. And the federally recognized Indian tribes are now eligible grant recipients due to the legislative action in the 2023 session. And the 2023 solicitation was released last September with roughly $103 million in state LRIP funding available. Applications were due in December, and we're reviewing these applications. We really did receive an increased response this year with 380 applications requesting $419 million in LRIP funds, with agency split as shown, which includes three applications from tribes. And these requests would leverage an additional $506 million in local, federal, and other funds. So our state aid, MnDOT state aid staff is currently reviewing applications, developing a draft reward, award recommendations, and recommendations will be presented to the LRIP Advisory Committee in March. We anticipating announcing awards in late March or early April. Now I'd like to touch on the Local Bridge Replacement Program, LBRP. In fact, I had the wrong acronym on the first bullet there, but I'm talking about the Bridge Replacement Program for local roads. The 23 session resulted in just over $85 million in state bridge funding for the Local Bridge Replacement Program. And again, this funding greatly appreciated and quickly put to use. So the table on this slide shows the number of bridge projects funded, amount of state bridge funds allocated, and total estimated costs in two-month periods. Projects that received funding in July and August of 23 were generally those from the waiting list of bridges that had accumulated between roughly January of 22 and July of 23. So these projects were on the shelf. They're ready to be delivered and waiting for state bridge funding to become available. So roughly $60 million of the $85 million appropriated in 23 has been allocated and has leveraged an additional $59.3 million in local and federal funds. So at this rate of allocating state bridge funds, we expect the full $85 million to be allocated by this midsummer. And the remaining need, of course, is significant, with approximately 600 bridges on the local system in need of replacement or rehabilitation, with a preliminary request for $282 million in state bridge funding. And then on the state trunk highway bonding side, the transportation omnibus budget, Chapter 68, authorized $600 million in trunk highway bonding, including $200 million for state road construction, and that's currently programmed for the Blatnik Bridge. In 2022, 6.3% of our national highway system bridges were rated as being in poor condition, which exceeds the statewide target of 5%, and the increase over the last few years is due large in part to the Blatnik Bridge in Duluth falling into poor condition, because these performance measures are on square footage of bridge, and it is our second longest bridge in the state. And for non-NHS bridges, 4.2% were in poor condition, which is in line with previous years and just better than our statewide target. We also had our fourth round of corridors of commerce funding provided by the Minnesota legislature, and that includes a total of $403 million, including $153 million provided by the legislature in 2023 that funded eight projects. And there were also six named road projects, as well as facilities. There was an investment, $87.4 million in 2023. So now I will move to our requests for capital investments for this year. The governor's capital budget recommendations includes four items to be funded with trunk highway cash, totaling near $73 million, and two items funded with GO bonds, totaling $5 million, so for a total of nearly $78 million in recommendations. And so now I'll touch on each of these proposals in more detail. Starting with high-priority bridges. The governor is recommending $40 million in trunk highway cash for bridges on the trunk highway system. The $40 million will focus on existing planned bridges that are deteriorating into poor condition across the state, and these are in our program and going through the project development process now, so ready to be delivered soon. And funding a portion of these projects through this request would free up MnDOT's annual bridge funds into the future. And that funding that would be freed up could be used as a portion of match dollars that we could further pursue federal funding for. And so the $40 million in state dollars, assuming a 20% match for federal dollars, would leverage up to $160 million in federal funds. So the timeline for the use of these dollars is within the next few years, but would free up funds for larger bridge projects into the future. And those larger bridge projects are projects high priority due to their structure type, cost, size, and overall importance to the system. Then the next item is our drainage asset management program. So the program request is for $4.8 million in trunk highway fund cash, and that is to track, assess, and repair vulnerable hydraulic assets across the state. So MnDOT is the largest owner of hydraulic infrastructure in the state of Minnesota. And our agency owns and maintains culverts, storm sewer systems, ponds, structural pollution control, drainage structures, to name a few. And the needed projects may include highway culvert and storm sewer rehab, flood resiliency improvement projects, and long-term monitoring of vulnerable hydraulic infrastructure.
Hydraulic infrastructure is especially vulnerable with our changing climate. And most of our existing infrastructure was designed based on historical rainfall or flood data. And the capacity of these hydraulic systems is not enough to mitigate the increased frequency that we're seeing for extreme precipitation events. Next item is highway rail grade crossings. Governor is recommending $2 million in geo bonds for highway rail grade crossing devices. Minnesota has over 4,000 railroad at-grade crossings, and on average, Minnesota records 36 crashes per year involving 5 fatalities. There are over 750 signal systems that should be replaced, and we anticipate $400,000 to replace grade crossing safety systems that would cover about 4 to 5 of these devices. And so the timeline on this, we'd start the process as soon as funding is received, and then the process timeline is such where solicitation or selection is 12 months, agreement development, and then execution about 4 months. Project construction would be up to 18 months, and then project closeout, inspection audit, another 6 months. Probably a rather conservative timeline. I understand we've moved through most of the program dollars from last year already. Parking safety improvements. The governor's request includes $7.75 million in trunk highway cash for truck parking safety improvements. So this would be $7.5 million to add truck parking spaces and $250,000 to maintain, analyze data, and repair or replace the truck parking information management system. Parking of trucks is a top concern in the freight industry. And MnDOT has completed a statewide truck parking study in collaboration with the trucking industry to identify existing parking trends, where key capacity gaps are, and identify potential future solutions. So for this request, truck parking improvements could occur at the Big Spunk rest area in Avon and Enfield rest area in Monticello. So both are near St. Cloud, one in each direction of I-94. And much of this request pays for the removal of existing pavement, constructing pavement, site modifications, lighting, parking sensors, curbs, and gutters. And as I mentioned, the $250,000 would also be invested in the truck parking information system. The timeline, we anticipate completing final design in December of 25. February of 2026 would be the letting for the projects, and then in June of 2026 to January of 2027, timeline for construction. And we have the Port Development Assistance Program. Governor is asking for $6 million in geo bonds to support the Port Development Assistance Program. And this program would support the following ports. It would be St. Paul, Winona, Red Wing, Wabasha, and Duluth. The project needs for 2024 and beyond total $52 million as of January of last year. And the request would would further the $18 million appropriated from last session. Funding from last year went to each of these public ports. And so some examples of projects include construction of silos for storage purposes, deck and access road restoration, new barge terminal facility would be another example. And then there is our facilities capital improvement program. So the recommendation here is for $20.1 million in trunk highway cash for MnDOT building infrastructure needs. Deferred maintenance across all MnDOT facilities is approaching $200 million. The $20.1 would be for the St. Cloud headquarters mechanics addition. The original shop there, mechanics shop, was built in 1969, and the shop requires space for more than 70 snowplow trucks supported in the shop and additional equipment needs as well. And St. Cloud to the Twin Cities, that stretch of road certainly has seen a lot of growth over the recent years and requiring extended service demands and additional space for additional equipment to keep up with that, that's storing in the shop. And that concludes our list of the recommendations from the governor's capital budget for this year. Mr. Chair, I stand for questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Members, any questions? Seeing none, I would just ask a few questions real quick. So, Commissioner or Director, can you just talk about knowing that for the local roads and local bridge program, the applications go beyond what was appropriated in 2023. Can you talk about, is MnDOT planning to award the full amount that was appropriated in both the transportation bill and the capital investment bill, or no?
Mr. Chair, I defer to Sam Brown for that.
Director, please identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, Chair Lee, Sam Brown, Budget Director at MnDOT. And if I'm understanding the question correctly, both the what was in the capital budget as well as our omnibus budget were are going forward in the solicitation.
And so, Director, then just so we receive or MnDOT received 419 in the local roads improvement program, and so, but you in application and then in the 2023 legislation, you receive almost $103 million. So the expectation is that you will award the $103 million that was allocated?
Yes, Chair Lee, that will be awarded and will be later this spring, will the solicitation awards will be announced.
Okay, thank you. And then just to the local bridge program, I know that that program has a cap of bridges of $7 million or less. And so what happens to those local bridge that costs more than $7 million, can they still apply and get an award less than $7 million or not?
Mr. Chair, could I ask our Director of State Aid for Local Transportation, Ted Schoenecker, to talk about
yes.
that process, please?
Welcome, please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Ted Schoenecker. I'm the Assistant Division Director for State Aid and Statewide Radio Communications. Thank you for the question. For those bridges that are over $7 million, there needs to be a special appropriation or language for those bridges in order to receive the state bridge bond funds.
So they cannot apply for this program as is without those legislative changes?
Mr. Chair, committee members, I don't believe so, but why don't I follow back up just to confirm that?
And then do MnDOT know how many local bridges we have that cost more than $7 million that cannot apply for that program?
Mr. Chair, committee members, we have a list of bridges that are sent to us by all the counties and cities, so we can look at that list to identify those bridges.
And then just a last follow-up on this then, or to the governor's recommendations, will any of these bridges be eligible for the high-priority bridges? Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The high-priority bridge funding that is being recommended for trunk highway cash can only go toward trunk highway bridges.
Thank you. And so, you know, members, I'm just bringing that up. I think that that's a discussion that we should possibly have in here or also in the Transportation Committee, where we have a, I believe, arbitrary cap of $7 million. And so we have big bridges throughout the or local bridge throughout the state that cost more than seven, and that there's no funding source unless we provide direct appropriations to them. So that's why I'm bringing the four. Seeing other questions, thank you, Commissioner and staff.
Thank you.
So last on the agenda, we have the Met Council. Welcome, Chair. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Charlie Zelli. I have the honor of being the chair of the Metropolitan Council.
Lucky you.
I'm will present three items for your consideration for the governor. Recommendation for bonding. That is $37 million for the Arterial Bus Rapid Transit Capital Improvement Program, $5 million from the Inflow and Infiltration Grant Program as part of our environmental services, and $2.5 million for our regional parks and trail bonding program. And just to get into the, I should mention I am joined by some agency experts, Katie Roth, who manages our arterial bus rapid bus program, Ned Smith, who's an executive in our environmental services, and just coming in as our Met Council chief financial officer, Lisa Barras, who is our director of community development, oversees our park programs, and you know Jed Shetton and Hannah Pallmeyer are here with me as well. Getting into the bus capital program, you know, I have to say that the arterial bus rapid transit program has been very successful over the past number of years, in part with the support from state funding. We've had ridership, which actually has come back to 2019 levels. In fact, even surpassed it in the A line. We have the A line in operation, the first, the C line, and now the D line. We have the B line under construction. E line is and F lines are really advancing in their planning, and it has been, as I say, both successful in terms of the operations, also successful how we work with local governments to ensure that we come at times that roadways are being improved simultaneously. It really is an enhanced way of providing express bus service on local and county roads and state roads. The shelters are really enhanced stations. They act much like an LRT that you can enter and exit at any time. You buy your ticket at the shelter. And it is more express-like. It doesn't stop every block, stops every three or four blocks. It has a little gizmo that helps turn traffic lights green, and so it is faster by as much as 25%. The ease of use and the fact that it moves quickly along the roadway. These are existing lines that are very fairly heavily trafficked, but it has gone even with greater success. So as we think about this system, we've identified a number of routes about 4 years ago, and the H line is the next up. It's a line that expands the network from all the way from Minneapolis to the Sunrise Shopping Center on Como. This is on 94. It really covers those local roads, but it's a fairly long east-west route. Our expectation is that with previous funds, these funds, plus the opportunity to match federal funds of as much as $75 million, we could complete the project. In addition, if there's any excess funds, we would be able to apply that to the J, K, and L lines, which have yet to be identified, but I can show you on a map. This is the H line. You can see the east-west length of it. But the J, K, and L lines, we have a number of options in this map. But we're going to go through a selection process which weighs a number of factors such as ridership, community impact, equity considerations, and the like. So with that, I will jump into our inflow and infiltration grant program. I know you're all probably very familiar, Mr. Chair, members, with this successful program. This has been a really important asset preservation program for municipalities. They have a great need in the cracks and the deterioration of municipal sewer wastewater pipes going into our fairly well capitalized interceptor system. That's the Met Council main pipes. The real challenge is the municipal pipes and then the local pipes coming into a home. And that's, you can see our the breadth of our system with nine plants and how many miles of our interceptor system exist, as many as 610 miles. It's funny. It's more miles than even there are interstates, and I have great respect for my friends at MnDOT. But this is something you never see, and yet it has a tremendous amounts of 250 million gallons a day. It's quite a busy and successful system. As I mentioned, the interceptor system, the municipal system, and the local system. Part of what has benefited this region is the separation of stormwater from that wastewater system. And yet the cracks in the pipes, the caused by age or tree roots, that creates openings where that stormwater kind of coming in with rain events just seeps into our system and takes valuable capacity from our wastewater system. But also it's costly for our municipalities, so they truly appreciate this grant program, which is 100% pass-through from MAC Council to municipalities, who also match these funds with 50% of their own funds. We have a very clear measures as to how you qualify, and there is certainly a great deal of need beyond which we're requesting. But what is really important is that we have a cadence of annual or semi or every 2 year appropriations, because that is something then municipalities know there's program and there's funds coming. This shows you the breadth and the number of municipalities who avail themselves of that, of this program. So just touching on the regional parks and trails program, I don't have to tell you all how important parks funding has been, especially how important parks are. This 55,000-acre regional system that has had a tremendous volume of people in use over the past few years, especially. This request from the governor is $2.5 million. That will be matched by our own Met Council levy in the amount of $1.67 million. That's $2 for every $3 that come forward in bonding, and 100% of those funds are allocated by agreed upon again formula that all implementing agencies really appreciate and agree on. They of course would appreciate even more funds, but how we allocate the funds has been something that has gotten kind of universal acceptance. This shows you the breakdown by the different implementing agencies. Or these are the park agencies that have plans for each of these funds. Last year we had a benefit of not only capital investment but also general funds directly for rehabilitation and asset preservation. But much of these funds are really required and needed for these parks systems to continue to meet the needs of their constituents. This just shows you how the funds are going to specific projects around the entire metro region. Again, the 11 projects have been identified. So with that, and I know I went through it very quickly, but I respect your time and the afternoon, but these are three very distinct programs, and we appreciate your consideration.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Chair Zelli. Do you recall in the last bonding bill how much money you received for inflow and infiltration?
Chair Zelli.
The info, Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, I believe we had about $12 million to our municipalities last year. And we expect all those municipalities that have been identified will be able to build those projects in this year and next year.
Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Zelli. Was that adequate funding for the last time? What are you requesting for this time?
Chair Zelli.
We're requesting a lesser amount, but that was, Mr. Chair and Representative Israel, there's certainly a tremendous amount of need, and but there's a limited capacity of both of the contractors to do the work, and then of course the priorities of the of the overall budget. Again, I think that as I mentioned, I think municipalities like to know that this program continues and on a regular basis.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and Chair Zelli. You know, certainly I recognize this is an important program, and you know, I did support funding in the last bill for it. But you know, as you insinuated, you know, we don't want to appropriate more money than you can spend in 1 year.
Chair Zelli.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Erdahl. There is a lot that the contractors who specialize in this work are doing, not just with inflow and infiltration grants, but with some of Met Council's own programs, some of the other work that, that we're doing, but and not just in the metro area, but throughout the state of Minnesota.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Erdahl, because it's kind of curious that we seem to be able to appropriate hundreds of millions of dollars to the PFA, and there's enough contractors to get that work done, but we can only do $5 million every year, every other couple years, and it takes 25 years or 35 years for us to ever complete this project. And when we had the one-time money, we obviously wanted more money. And if we go back to 2022, we were looking at having parity between inflow infiltration and the PFA. So I just find it curious that there's enough contractors to do some stuff, but there's not enough contractors to do other stuff. And then we've got the lead service lines as well, but we're still asking for more money to do lead service lines. So I think it'd be good to hear, you know, how much money is actually going out, has gone out, how it's going out, because as you know, Chair Zelli, we've been in this 1, 2, 5, 3, 4, 5 million a year nibble on the problem rather than solving it. But my actual question was different. And that question is, Chair Zelli, if we appropriated money to the Met Council to distribute for community tree planting grants to local units of government to deal with Emerald Ash Borer, would the Metropolitan Council be able to do that?
Chair Zelli.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, on the first, on the issue of wastewater, because Ned Smith is sitting next to me, he was an expert from our environmental services area, I don't mean to insinuate that we have, that we are restricted to $5 million because of contractor capacity. It is an issue, but it's also why regular cadence of grants is helpful. Maybe Ned, you can comment on.
Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ned Smith. I am the Director of Pretreatment and Finance for Environmental Services at the Met Council. And speaking of PFA, so we have a broader capital program. I&I is just one piece of that where we're sending that out to municipalities. But within our own program, we do $42 million, roughly, per year from the PFA, and then we do about $60 to $70 million on top of that out of our own bonding fund. So all in all, just for our own capital, we're investing about $120 million, which means that's $120 million that contractors are doing. We don't do our own work. I agree with the chair. $5 million, there's plenty of capacity for $5 million. I believe there's capacity in the contractor community for more than that. I couldn't tell you what the ceiling is. The thing about I&I is we're never done. As long as time continues, pipes continue to erode. So there's really never a finishing point for I&I. It's an ongoing program, which is why we are so grateful to the legislature for continuing this program year after year. Thank you.
Chair Zelli, to the second piece of Chair Hansen's question.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd invite Lisa Barras, who's our Director of Community Development and managing our park system regarding replacing trees for the Emerald Dashboard.
Welcome. Please identify yourself. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Lisa Barajas, Executive Director of the Community Development Division at the Metropolitan Council. We are incredibly grateful for the funding that the legislature provided to address hazardous trees in this last legislative session. We know that the funding amounts kind of skipped all over the place, and there certainly is no shortage of need. Similar to INI, no shortage of need for maintaining trees and our tree canopy, not just within our regional park system, but across the entire metro area. At my last count, I believe we had contracts executed or grant agreements executed with 10 or 9 out of 10 of our regional parks implementing agencies, and a lot of work has already been completed, really taking advantage of that summer and very warm fall season, especially to take care of hazardous trees that had or trees that were already known to have infection, remove those ahead of time, and take care of work. And we know that there's some continued work underway as well. But thank you.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, and I appreciate that answer on the park trees that we provide the cash for you. And I'm asking if we provided you with additional money. I mean, we could provide additional money for that, but if we provided you additional money to distribute to local units of government for their tasks on public land.
Ms. Barajas.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I want to be sure I understand right. Are you asking me if you did already do that or if you could and we could spend it?
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm asking if we appropriated you money to the Metropolitan Council, could you have a grant system that distributed to the local units of government within the Metropolitan Council jurisdiction?
Ms. Barajas.
Mr. Chair, Representative, absolutely we could. That is something that certainly our local units of government have identified as being important. Tree canopy maintenance and addressing, especially emerald ash borer, has been an identified issue for years. We've done our own work. You may know about our growing shade tool, which identifies across the region overall canopy in addition to priority areas for conservation, equitable outcomes, and other reasons. Certainly, so we do have an identified need, and we've been supporting some of that local work through some of our own very small programs for planning and getting ready to maintain trees. So not just planting the trees themselves, but the maintenance programs being in place are incredibly important to ensure success in that planting.
We have Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. I know we're running short on time, so I'll try to be quick. Thank you, Chair Zelli, for coming. Good to see you again. You're always welcome. I really appreciate your comments on BRT and the virtues of BRT and looking at your route map. So you say there's a JK and L lines. They haven't been identified, but do you have a sense of where they might go? And let me just help focus your attention, because I'm looking at the route map, and it's pretty populated on the West or East Metro, but nothing on the West Metro, certainly west of 100, and specifically nothing on 55. I know we've talked about Highway 55 BRT. I just wanted to see where that's at and when we might expect it, and whether any of these identified lines are include that.
Chair Zelli.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carroll, that's a great question. I'm going to defer to Katie Roth, who manages our ABRT system. However, I will say I'm really aware of some of the studies and the corridor work we're doing in Highway 55 in particular. There are other opportunities, we believe, in the north western part of the metro. But Katie, want to come
in? Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed answering the question.
Mr. Chair, Representative, my name is Katie Roth. I'm the Director of Arterial Bus Rapid Transit at Metro Transit. And building on the Chair's point, the efforts underway to take a look at Highway 55 really are beyond the scope of what we're talking about here. And bus rapid transit in this region comes onto this map through a number of ways. As we look at arterial bus rapid transit, it's largely building from our existing route network. And so we're looking at what are those candidates that are carrying a lot of people today, and how can we enhance those? a lot of counties and other local entities can look at those in other ways and look for ways we can solve larger transportation needs using bus rapid transit. So I will just note with regards to this map, this was the work that was concluded in 2021. We'll be refreshing this and looking at the rest of the Metro Transit service area to identify where are those candidates that would be ripe for that next set of implementation of arterial BRT as the JKN outlines.
Representative Carroll.
Thank you. Let me just be more blunt. When should I expect Highway 55 BRT to open?
Director.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carroll, since Katie's just pointed to me, I'll say that I think the planning stages and the understanding of how we build out additional lines, as it really is ABRT and other areas of this transit network, which includes the large transitways, such as the Purple Line, the Gold Line under construction. We have Riverview, Blue Line, are very kind of large backbone transitways. But in addition, we are looking to programs like Highway 55, other kind of micro transit, other connections. And we have, thanks to this legislature, a funding stream to actually making those considerations. So I would say that that in the next couple of years, we'll have a much better understanding about that vision and what are the additional possible routes could be.
Representative Carroll, last follow up.
Yeah, I would just a comment. I would just encourage you to expedite as fast as you can, given that it's a desert out there, transit desert. Thank you.
Representative Erdahl, and then Myers. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. Real quick. I just want to remind Representative Hansen and others that when Mr. Freeman was here, I asked the same question. You know, how much can they spend? I just want to make sure that we're not appropriating more money than can be spent.
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Thank you, Chair Zelli. You talked a little bit about ridership, and I'm just wondering if you can give a little bit more context to where we were in 2019 as far as use and where we are now, because you said, you know, we're making a comeback.
Director or Chair Zelli.
Mr. Chair, Representative Myers, I can be happy to give you a greater specificity on our ridership figures from 2018-2019, and then now post-pandemic. But the reduction in ridership, which happened across the board, really affected different route systems differently. And as an example, the express buses, express train, was impacted the most, maybe down as much as 90% or more. Light rails down 45%. The regular bus system not affected as much. What was interesting, and that I mean to call out, is that those lines affected the least in terms of reduction were the ABRT lines, and that as an example, the A line, I believe, is almost recovered the fastest, maybe, and closer to or exceeding 2019 figures. So I could get through the exact ridership numbers, Mr. Chair, and Representative Myers, if you'd like.
Representative Myers.
Yeah, thank you for that. Just a follow-up comment to that. I think it'd just be worthwhile for this committee to, you know, take a look at actually what, you know, where we're at from where we were. And I think that maybe will let us know where we need to focus our funds.
Sure. Thank you.
So seeing no other questions, I would just have some concluding remarks or comments. I think that it will be helpful, Chair Zelli, if the Met Council could actually provide us with information on how you go about doing your analysis, saying that because of the $120 million or so that we cannot take on more dollars for I&I. And I will be making the same request for the Public Facilities Authority, too, to see, you know, last session we appropriated over $300 million for the PFA, and they're able to do the work, but $120 million to the Met Council, and we don't think that we can do the work here. And so I really want to take a deeper dive at that information, and so I'll look forward to that information. Members, thank you to the Met Council. Members, that's the end of our agenda. I do want to move the minutes for February 26th. Vice Chair Ryer, do I have a motion to remove the minutes for February 26th?
Mr. Chair, so moved.
Vice Chair Ryer moved the minutes for February 26th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Nay. Members, next week we will be hearing from DPS, Deed, Corrections, and then also get a presentation on the targeted community grant program from Deed. The meeting is adjourned.